It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Sunday, June the 30th, 2024. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on X at Talking Mets No G and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. No G, Mike Silva at talkingmetspodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, Talking Mets No G, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And of course, I want to welcome in the good folks from the Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to another edition of the Talking Mets podcast, come to you just a little bit after a long rain delay, a disappointing end to the homestand. Although the Mets achieved the goal that we had set out just a week ago of a 3-2 homestand, very disappointing last couple of games. So coming to you here right after the Astros defeat the Mets 10-5. And, you know, when we go through the baseball offseason and we go and we do all the things that we do, we play GM, we break down free agents, we do the trash or treasure over there at the newsletter and break down all these different names that are, being acquired. And, you know, normally when we talk about the team, it's always in context of numbers. It's in context of run creation and strikeouts and walks and ERA plus and basically how sustainable every one of these players are. We put in age and where they are in their career and all the other fun stuff that we do, which is how general managers have to do their job. They have to base it on numbers and history, and it's such a numbers-driven game. And even someone like myself who has never been a hardcore analytics guy, I mean, yeah, I incorporate analytics into everything we do here, and I've come to appreciate analytics as I was vehemently anti-analytics when I started this show back in 2007, 17 years ago, and really was basing everything on the heartbeat, was basing it on anecdote and narratives and things that I valued growing up, watching baseball in the 80s and 90s, growing up listening to WFAN, growing up looking at the game from a different lens. And then, of course, the onslaught of analytics came to me. And as I got deeper and deeper into this, you know, independent media and doing what I do here, I became to appreciate how you could evaluate players as time went on, as I gained more experience, as I listened and understood. And from just seeing the results, I came to understand a lot of what those analytics guys have talked about. And when David Stearns was hired, we knew, even when Steve Cohen took over the team, coming from the financial industry, which is all analytics, we knew that the Mets would be heavily into analytics, whether it be using new technology to prepare their hitters or look at the undervalued assets, pitching labs, all that other stuff. We knew the Mets were going to be all in on analytics. But what we just saw in June, as the Mets had the second best record in baseball, they just lost that out to the Astros, who beat them 2 out of 3, had the best. I mean, think about this. The Mets just had the best offensive month in their team history. I don't know if you picked up on that during the broadcast today. Better than the 86 Mets, better than the 1999 Mets, better than the 2006 Mets. Some of the best, the 87 Mets, a great Mets offensive team. All these great offensive Mets teams in their history, and the Mets, make no mistake about it, have been no more for pitching than offense throughout their history, but they've got some good offensive teams, those clubs I mentioned, throughout their history. Those are some serious offensive clubs that the Mets have put out there. 2022 was a really good offensive team, and this club is right there, if not a skosh better. So they put all that output throughout the month of June. And when you start to look at the names that were part of that, the Harrison Baders and the Jose Iglesias and the Luis Torrens and Tyrone Taylor, and of course, you expect Alonso and Lindor and Nimmo and Alvarez, who's evolving into a really nice offensive player, starting to show what he could be, starting to show that he may not be Piazza, but he can be pointing in that direction. You know, when we talk about the offseason and about big outs and big wins, you know, you never look at the Danny Youngs, and even though Daniel Nunez was an interesting pitching prospect, you don't talk about him in the offseason. Reed Garrett, I know he's been a big part of that bullpen. You don't talk about him at all in the offseason. And as the season develops, as we get to the point where we are now, July 1st, where the Mets, even though they're a game under, are squarely in a position now as they have 14 games between now and the All-Star break to really put themselves right there in the thick of the wild card if they play their cards right. No pun intended. We really don't factor in all this X factor. And J.D. Martinez, I think it all starts with. The more you hear about J.D. Martinez, a guy that I was like, all right, if the Mets sign him, great, but let's not give him too much money. Back injuries, who knows if he's on the decline. What we didn't factor in, and it's hard for us here at the Talking Mets podcast, and truthfully, we've talked about it. It's hard for anybody covering the team unless you're really embedded into the back-end thinking to understand chemistry. And I think that's really where, as we see all this good vibes that we've seen out of this club for the last 4 or 5 weeks, whether you attribute it to the Grimace goofiness, the OMG song from Iglesias, just the hitting skull sessions that, and this is where I'm going with Martinez, that Martinez start out with, the bonding, the fun that they're having, everything that we thought this team was about to become, that the yoke was about to suck them up back when Jorge Lopez threw his glove and we had all the controversy at the end of the May, all the negativity, how I came on even before that and said, this core, these core offensive players, if they want to be part of the Mets, the Alonzos, the Nimmos, the McNeils, the Lindors, you know, even though they have contracts, there's also a chance where this thing might be broken up. And who knows what's possible if this goes bad, because this core has been here a while, knows what this is all about, and is getting sucked up by the negativity of what is the yoke of being a New York Met. All the stuff we thought they were headed towards was completely wiped out with this great month of June, primarily on the backs of the offense. Which is funny because they couldn't hit their way out of a paper bag at some points earlier in the year, especially that first homestand. It seems so far away. Now, J.D. Martinez, I think, and big crushing at bat today where if he had just moved the runner over, I think we're talking about a far different homestand. Even though it was a successful homestand, very disappointing homestand where you really would have liked, after they swept the Yankees, to get out on the road and face the Nats a game over instead of a game under. But they're right about where we thought they would be about a week ago. J.D. Martinez bringing the professionalism, hearing the stories about how he's talking to Nimmo about his hitting approach, about he's was the veteran voice in that locker room that really brought this whole thing together. Now, maybe it's that, hey, blanket, who cares? Everyone thinks we stink, so let's go out there and just play our game. Maybe it's the holding the hitters accountable type of conversations that he's having. But whatever it is, J.D. Martinez is worth his weight in gold and is showing you that veteran leadership, good vibes, and these things that I think even me, even a guy like me who values these things and believes in these things, maybe we've gotten so far away from it. And we have to remember it. Because when you look up and down this Mets lineup, Harrison Bader is having a career offensive year, but and he might come back down and regress. Good player, but nothing special offensively throughout his career. And this is all being done with Jeff McNeil hitting like a pitcher at times. And yeah, Pete Alonso's finally turned it around, but he's not been vintage Pete Alonso up until maybe recently. And Nimmo's finally coming around, but he, up until the last couple of weeks, wasn't vintage Brandon Nimmo. And Lindor, I mean, maybe leadoff agrees with him. I mean, he's been going back into being Lindor. But when you look up and down, this is not the most talented 1-9 that you've seen in Mets history. You compare him to the 86 club or the 87 club or the 99 club or the 06 club. I mean, those clubs probably have a little bit something, but this club seems to be gelling. Now, I don't think they could go out and score 6.5 runs a game throughout the rest of the year. That's insane. That's record setting. I think you see a lot of progression to the mean. I mean, every single core offensive player was significantly under their career norms up until about June 1st. So maybe this is something that we should have expected. I do think, and we talked about it in the preseason, and we ran the numbers with our little calculator, the back of the paper bag math, I do think they're a team that could score 5 runs a game, and that should be good enough to keep them in most ball games. And they're in a situation where they are exactly how, before this got really bad at the end of May, and we had the end of the getting to know you phase, and said, hey, this is a team that just is getting swallowed up by the yoke, so forget about all the other stuff we thought about them. They're getting swallowed up by New York. No, they're not getting swallowed up by New York. They actually may have, whether it be the influx of leadership from Martinez, Iglesias' energy, whatever it may be, they are now right there and have a golden opportunity over the next 2 weeks leading up to the All-Star break to have a fun summer. Maybe not a banner summer, maybe not a championship summer, but a fun summer in David Stern's first year of what I call the stabilizing of the Mets organization, an organization that has been in complete destabilized mode for 6 or 7 years. And they have a chance to do something special here. And I think a lot of it has to do with things that have nothing to do with numbers. It has to do with veteran leadership and a guy like J.D. Martinez and maybe a little energy and a little perspective from a guy, Jose Iglesias, who had nobody wanted last year, was out of the game, and he had a decent year with Colorado and was in AAA fighting for his baseball career. And the talk was, when he got brought up, how happy he was to have another shot. And I think around the league, GMs have to start to take notice that, yes, these guys are expensive. Nobody after so many years, 10 years in the game, is going to put the time and effort and be away from their family and not get what their veteran status deserves. Maybe the back of the baseball card says they're a little overpaid, but if you're going to put the time and effort into being a big leaguer, there's a certain amount of money that you need to get paid. Now, I know a lot of people in the audience are going to be like, hey, give me $750,000 and I'll go out and sit at the end of the bench or get shuttled up from low A to, from AAA to the big leagues. But you know what? You don't have the career earnings that these guys do. And it's the equivalent of someone like you saying, hey, I'll work for minimum wage, whatever that is where you are. You're going to say, no, I mean, I'm not going to do that. I'm, you know, 50 years old. I've proven so much. I'm not going to work for minimum wage. Well, that's all I could give you. Well, it's not worth it for me to work for minimum wage. I'd love to work for you, but I'm not going to do it for minimum wage. Now, I know that's on a way different scale, and I'm not trying to insult anybody here, but that's how these guys think about it. And I think the game has swallowed up a lot of veterans who can't find jobs or can't find a pay commensurate with their time in the game, and they walk away from the game, and there's institutional knowledge and leadership that goes out the door. A lot of times you see it in the NBA with how, I mean, look at this past NBA draft. Nobody knows who half of these kids are because they're 18 years old, and then all the kids who spent 4 years in college, they get drafted in the second round, and then you start to ask yourself, well, these kids all go on teams that are rebuilding. Where's the veteran leadership? And those guys, the Taj Gibsons of the world, sometimes they have a hard time finding a job because it requires them to get paid a certain amount. And you could really attribute a lot of what's going on if you want to just talk about strict numbers. It's basically progression to the mean. That's what the analytics people will say, and I think there's a certain amount of it. But this team was in such a bad place. They were about to get swallowed up by New York. They were about to get swallowed up by everything that's bad about being a New York Met. We were seeing 2019 and early 2019 play itself out right in front of us. Really was, when Jorge Lopez and the glove and Gelb's baiting and the negativity, all of that was a movie that's played out here time and time and time again over the last 2 decades. And for the first time in a very long time, when the team went into that dark place, instead of going off into the abyss, they pulled back. And I don't think it has anything to do with numbers. I think it just has to do with the fact that there was some good veteran leadership. Maybe Jose Iglesias, the positivity of his song, OMG, or the fact that you could look at him. If you're Jeff McNeil, and a guy that, when I looked and I saw him down in Tampa during batting practice the couple of days that I was watching the team, and I was down there by the dugout, he looked miserable. And I'm like, this guy is absolutely miserable. And I'm not saying he's back, because he certainly hasn't shown that he's consistently back. But maybe looking at a guy like Iglesias, who, by the way, could be him not too distant future, and seeing how appreciative he is of being back and how fast and fleeting being a member of this fraternity is. Because once you're out and you're gone, you may come back and get a chance to go down on the field with a field pass, but you're not part of the fraternity anymore. Look at a guy like Trevor May, who's on social media. He's kind of out of the, he's kind of gone and forgotten about. And he was a big key component of the Mets just a couple of years ago. So I think the first message I have for you on this Sunday evening after this, I would say good homestand but disappointing finish, is that sometimes it's not just about the numbers, it's about the intangibles. And let's not forget that, because even I have forgotten about that. And I have not seen a turnaround like this, not only from the team, but from the fan base. A fan base that from the jump was negative in April. And how can you not be? Lost out on Yamamoto, had the disappointing 2023 season, was told all offseason by the media, the mainstream media, the local media, that this team stinks. And we're seeing it more and more. The media will tell you that your eyes lie to you. And I kept telling you, this is not a bad team. This is a team that's got some work to be done. But this is not a bad team. But the media said they stink, they stink, they stink, they stink. And it's like almost an indoctrination. And everybody, and you got to remember, the normal Mets fan that's not living and dying in this niche world that that brings you to me on a weekly basis, that are living and reading, listening to WFAN, reading the New York Post maybe, water cooler fans, they're going to believe the Buster Olneys and all these guys that are like, the Mets stink, the Mets stink, the Mets stink. They're going to trade Diaz. They're going to trade Diaz. They're going to trade Alonso. They're not going to talk about Daniel Nunez. They're not going to talk about Christian Scott and Blade Tidwell and Dom Hamill and the Mets prospects. Maybe they'll touch a little bit on it, but they're not going to talk about that. They're going to look at this like how you and I used to look at the team in the 90s. Maybe earlier than that, if you're a little older than me. And we have to remember, there's a lot of fans like that. There's a lot of fans who don't know I exist. That's okay. There's a lot of fans who don't know, who didn't live during the days of Mets blog. They didn't even look into that stuff. They were too busy reading the New York Daily News and the New York Post. So when you start to look at the turnaround here, how the fans have been energized, how the team has been energized, you want to say it's because of a purple character, from a restaurant chain? Okay. You want to say it's a great homestand beating the Yankees? Maybe. You want to say it's an inspiring Latin song? Sure. But there is a definite opportunity to push the yoke and all the anvil that is being part of the New York Mets into the abyss, even without winning a championship, just by them going forward and now seizing the opportunity that's in front of them. And that's where the real scary part here is, because the yoke and the anvils and the negativity and all the things that make it hard being a New York Met have not gone away. They still exist. They may be in hiding. They may be temporarily on vacation. Maybe they're there and we're not feeling it, just like when you take Tylenol. You have a headache. It's there. Your body doesn't feel it. So it always has a way of creeping up in front of you and stealing away your energy. Now, some of that happened last Sunday night with the absurd suspension of Edwin Diaz. And what's funny is that I saw a quote on X from someone that says the umpire, because they screwed up the count yesterday, which is a first. I don't think I've really seen that. I'm sure it's happened, but in such an egregious manner where they had to go to the replay center. You can't trust the umpire to keep the clicker, something that a softball umpire could do on a Sunday in any sandlot across the United States. But you're going to have them make decisions on how much pine tar is too much or what kind of illegal substance is on their hand. So blows my mind here. So you see where this team is at, and now here's the scary part. Yeah, you got five more games without Diaz, but even with Diaz back, you're starting to see the erosion of the bullpen. Now that Drew Smith, who I'm not a huge fan of Drew Smith, but a decent arm, is out for the year. Brooks Raley is out for the year. Sean Reed Foley's not out for the year, but he continues to show a fragileness, which I don't think he could ever stay consistently healthy. Adrian Hauser has been a godsend, but he and Daniel Nunez can't pitch every day. Jake Diekman has probably been extremely disappointing. Adam Ottavino has never been further away from the Adam Ottavino that we saw 2 years ago that set up Diaz. And I'll be honest with you, Reed Garrett, who's been a revelation and has had a really good year, concerns me because when the lights have gotten bright, when he's had to take over as a closer for Diaz, or like the other night was asked to get big outs against the Yankees as the game, a 9-1 game, was slipping away. I mean, he nearly had an anxiety attack. You saw it in the dugout. And then you saw him pitch very cowardly to the Astros on Saturday. You want to say it's because of overuse? Fine. But I don't think overuse leads to nimbling. Overuse leads to other bad things. When you see that, you start to look at this bullpen and you say to yourself, all these good vibes, all this work just to have, you know, they're playing way over the head. They're not a team that, very few teams in the league can play 700 baseball consistently. And the Mets are not one of those teams. Even if you were to pick a team in the league, it's not them. All of that could go away by the All-Star break with a bad bullpen. And fixing this bullpen is not that easy. Because you saw it with Festa coming in, you know, the scrap heap arms that, for the most part, Stearns has been pretty good at identifying. He kept Garrett around. Basically, Danny Young has had his moments. Well, who else? Cole Sulcer's had his moments here and there. He's not really been that good. Michael Tonkin, he's been better for the Yankees. Tyler J, not enough there. So you have all these scrap heap guys. Nobody's really worked out. And most of the time, these scrap heap guys are analytics darlings. They have something about them that makes them desirable. But you know that usually they're good in a very short, small sample size. Sometimes you get what the Dodgers do and the Yankees do, and you find diamonds in the rough. And maybe that's what you had with Reed Garrett. But even with that, you also have to think about, going back to what I said at the beginning, the inside, the heartbeat. Does Reed Garrett have it when the lights get bright? I'm not so sure. So you start to look even at a bullpen with Diaz there, and you say to yourself, man, the Mets have gotten themselves to the point where they have an offense that could score 5 runs a game and put up that crooked number and put pressure on the opposition. I mean, they beat up on some really good pitchers this month. They're going to be in games every night. They pretty much have, even before this great month. I mean, one of the things that was so frustrating in May is that they blew so many games. And this team easily could be right there with the Atlanta Braves at the top of the wild card heap. And I'm not joking. They can be. They blew so many games in May. A lot of that had to do with Diaz being out of sorts. Now, is that because of sticky stuff or because of the return from the injury or because of something else? I don't know. But he was out of sorts. Let's see when he comes back in about a week. And knowing that this team will be in so many games, just like they were the last couple of days when they lost in annoying to heartbreaking fashion. And you look at this bridge, you say to yourself, this bullpen bridge can really be the yoke reasserting itself into the conversation and really being the wet blanket on what has been a pretty cool party. I mean, who can't get excited on Friday night with this team out there? I mean, have you ever seen a big league club dance and celebrate and have fun like this club is? And by the way, that's okay. Having fun and enjoying the season is okay. Don't let anybody tell you otherwise, because that's part of what the yoke of being a Mets fan is. People telling you you're not allowed to have fun until you win a championship. You're not allowed to have fun because having fun means you're going to jinx the club. Them having fun on Friday night has nothing to do why they lost on Saturday or today. They lost on Saturday because the bullpen walks too many batters and they had a pitcher where the lights got bright and he needed to step up and he didn't have it in him. And today they lost because, well, their best hitter this month in June, arguably, I don't have the numbers in front of me, but I think he was their best hitter, JD Martinez, couldn't execute with a runner on second and nobody out. They couldn't get a big hit. But that's going to happen. That's the regression to the mean. You're going to start to see some regression to the mean. But it's okay to have fun. But the real wet blanket on this whole thing is the bullpen and the walks. And look, yeah, the starters are not doing their part. They're not even, Quintana didn't even get through the fifth. But this rotation was built between the veterans that are 3-4-5 type of pitchers to the young kids like Christian Scott that have been brought up. They are really not built to get into the seventh inning. You did get that with Severino today. But even so, the pitchers like Severino, when you get to that third time around the order, even with a low pitch count, obviously the performance and the reads that the hitters get changed. So sometimes you don't even want to keep him in that long because of what the analytics suggests. So this bullpen can go down as really the turning point of all the good vibes, all the good feeling, and throw it right into the garbage. So it's critically important over the next 2 weeks as they go to Washington and Pittsburgh, and then they come home and face the Nats again, and then round out with a very bad Colorado team, that they could find a way to patch this together, especially when Diaz comes back, and make sure that that doesn't happen. Now, there might be some hope. Tyler Adcock looked decent through strikes. I could live with somebody like that. That's an interesting arm. I don't think Garrett is a waste, but I'm not sure he's a high leverage reliever as much as we think because of, again, when the lights get bright. I don't think Ottavino is trash, but in the post pitch clock, not being able to throw more than a couple of times over, holding runners on, he may be compromised. And I think the real interesting name coming out of that bullpen now, old school way of maybe using this guy, Adrian Hauser, a guy that could come out and pitch multiple innings, a la Trevor Williams a couple of years ago. You know, maybe he gets into a higher leverage situation. He's been lights out as a reliever. Lights out. And then obviously there's Daniel Nunez, who has been able, you've got a couple of guys able to go a couple of innings. The problem is once you pitch those guys the next day, you don't have access to them. So you're really putting pressure on those games when they pitch, like you saw on Saturday afternoon, to win those games. And when you don't, well, you get Matt Festa in the 10th inning or 11th inning against the Astros, and he gets let up. Because anybody that you go, that you bring up from the system, that's an analytics guy, a scrap heap guy, a Danny Young, a Festa, Tyler J, we'll see how this Adcock guy, who looked good again for an inning, how he plays out. Usually they only give you a small sample size of success. There's a reason why you get these guys off of waivers. They're not that good. It's not like the Mets are the only team using analytics. This is not like 15, 20 years ago when you had a handful of teams finding these guys because they were the only ones looking at this stuff. Everybody's looking at these guys. Take a look at the teams that look at these players and where they land. They're typically the most analytically driven teams. And then with the lack of options, this is where the league drives me bananas, to tell you the truth. The league drives me bananas. Where if they had only just allowed a couple of extras, I mean, I know it's a money thing, a couple extra spots on the roster for pitchers, you wouldn't have to lose a Johan Ramirez, who, by the way, looking pretty good in L.A. That's going to be one that the Mets are going to regret letting go. I know it was a numbers game. They had gotten that guy. He's pitching really well out in L.A., and that's going to be a shame because that could have been an arm they could have used. I know he didn't always pitch well when he was with the Mets, but, again, it was a small sample size. A lot of his underlying metrics are pretty good in the big leagues with his stuff and stuff plus and things like that. So the good vibes are here. The Mets have done what we could not have predicted 30 days ago, which is inserted themselves, did a complete 180 into a wild card race. Yes, they're a game under. Yes, I still say until you're 500, you can't be considered a serious contender. I'm not changing my tune on that. But now the next 2 weeks will determine whether or not we can seriously talk about what is this. We know this team needs bullpen help, and I'm going to get to that after the break. I know this team needs bullpen help, but we're not going to know if they're even going to be in the position to even desire trading something of value for the bullpen help until pretty much two shows from now when it's the All-Star break. Because they need to keep this going. June ended today. It ended on a sour note, but they had the second best record in the league. They nearly finished the month above 500, which is incredible. Because when you're 11 games under, it takes you at least a month to get to 500. They were about to do that and then some. And easily could have been multiple games over with a little bit of good bullpen. So, feeling better. A lot of lessons learned for the Mets, for the fans, for me this month. June was an interesting month on many fronts. And now the calendar turns to July. And if the Mets are going to go anywhere, they need to figure this bullpen out. Let's take a quick break. When we come back, we're going to round out the show. And before we wrap up, let's look at where the bullpen is, maybe some options. And I'm starting to look around the league to see what could be available. And I have one wild idea about bringing a couple of guys back that are familiar names, not just out of the bullpen, but as a starter. So let's take a quick break. We'll be back with more right after this.